As we continue in Judges chapter 4, I was thinking this week about going to seminary. And when I went to seminary, I thought I was going to learn how to use this, the Bible. Instead, I learned how to use a mop. You see, I went to seminary and I was ready to do whatever God was going to give me to do. And I've shared with you before that we went a long time without really having a job, and God provided finances for that. But over time, the finances were really diminishing to the point of having some issues with eating. And I was going to a church, and when we got there, the youth pastor of this church left right when I got there. Now, I'd been doing youth pastoring for 4 years. Now, this was a church of over 1,000 people, and I'd come from a church of less than 200. But I thought, boy, this just really makes sense. You know, I'll come in, I could be their youth pastor. You know, so I really prayed about it and thought, you know, God, you're obviously doing this because you brought me here to use the Bible, and so I'm sure that's what you're going to do. Well, that church did offer me a position. It didn't have anything to do with pastoring youth. In fact, the first thing that happened is I got to know the music minister. He said, you know, we could really use some help getting the words up on the screen. You have a lot of free time. We'd like to have that done before Sunday morning, and so would you come in and do that? So I did. I would come in on Tuesdays, and I would get all the words ready, and we'd run through it, and I'd make sure it was good for the week. But it still wasn't quite enough money because I had these kids, and they constantly wanted to eat. And so I thought, well, I'm going to do something else. And they knew I still had a shortage. They said, well, we've got a lot of cleaning around the church that we could use some help with. The baseboards are kind of bad. So they gave me first a stick with a tennis ball on the end of it. And I did. I went to all the baseboards throughout this entire church, and I rubbed the baseboards and took black marks off of them. I wondered if anyone paid attention, knew they were there before I started cleaning them. But then they said, you know, we could use some help in the kitchen. They had a meal every Wednesday night. And they said, you know, we've got all these people, and they're doing all this work, but we could use some help, someone who would mop and kind of clean up. And so that's what I would do. I would come in, and I would clean up the kitchen and mop it up and kind of clean it up. And I'll tell you, when I went to seminary, that's not what I thought I was going to be doing. I thought, Lord, you gave me a capacity to teach the Bible and do these other things. But God began teaching me then that even though you may have a capacity to something, you need to listen and find out what is the calling God has given you for the moment. You see, I'm thankful that I know the difficulties that are required to clean a church. I'm thankful that God used me for a time period working with youth. I'm thankful that I had to learn how to lead worship. I'm thankful that I've done those things because I understand how difficult they are now. You come in on Sunday morning, you may not realize, some of you do, but some of you may not realize what it takes to get us to this moment right now. All the people that have done things leading up to this moment. And you know what the Lord was teaching me as I got to seminary? That it wasn't all about me being trained and going and doing. It was about me learning that the church was more than me as a pastor. And that the church is all of us. Like I said last week, I am a member just like you, except I have this unique platform for 30-some-odd minutes on a Sunday to be able to share with you something I think God is specifically doing with us. Other than that, I go right back to serving with the rest of us because we're a church family together. But sometimes we can begin to sense the call that God may be putting on our lives, and maybe we are afraid to follow it. I've shared with you before, when I first felt the call to ministry, I felt like God might use me in anything except pastoring, because I definitely knew I couldn't do that. Now that I'm doing it, I definitely know I can't do it. But I'm here, and I know that God has given me a calling. I know that God is working that way. Sometimes we can be afraid of it. Sometimes we can be jealous because we didn't get someone else's calling. Oh, why don't I get to do that? I want to do that. I really want to do that bad. You know, we start to go through it. Maybe sometimes we just get distracted by life, and we miss what God is calling us to do. Not what God is calling the person next to you to do. What is God calling you to do? Today, our big point is simple. Find your calling and embrace it. Find your calling from God and embrace it. Today, as we look in Judges 4, you're going to meet two people, And with these two individuals, we're going to see one person who is just embracing the call that God has on her life, and another person who he is just evading it. He's afraid of it. He's not sure he can do it. And since last week, we're kind of skipping ahead a little bit, we saw Othniel, the first judge, the first guy who kind of stepped up. They had 40 years of peace, then they chose evil again, they got oppressed again, and at the point we're getting you ready to read here, they've had 80 years of peace and prosperity given to them by God, and yet again, they will choose evil. At this time, they're being ruled by the king of Canaan, and he has a military leader named Sisera, and this guy is leading a terrifying army. In fact, they have a technological advantage over everybody. They have iron chariots. Doesn't sound like much to us today, but these were the tanks of their time, and they had 900 of these things. And for 20 years, Israel has lived in fear so much that people aren't walking the main roadways. If you wanted to get somewhere, you were taking the back roads. The villages began to become abandoned. People were moving out of the towns where they could be easily found and into remote areas. Even though they knew it would be more difficult out there, they didn't want to be found by Sisera or even by some of their own desperate countrymen. And at this time, 20 years of this going on, you have a woman named Deborah who arrives. Let's take a look. Judges chapter 4, verses 4 through 5. Says, now Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was judging Israel at that time. She used to sit under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim, and the people of Israel came up to her for judgment. Now, we don't know much about Deborah. We don't get much family background on her. We have her husband's name, but we don't have any information about who he really was. But we do know a couple of things about this woman that are very important. The first one being that she was a prophetess. This is said of a few other women as well in Scripture. Another notable one would be Moses' sister Miriam. She was considered this. And when you hear prophet or prophetess or even someone today who has a spiritual gift of prophecy, what does that mean? It doesn't mean fortune-telling, it means truth-telling. Prophets were people that, yes, sometimes they declared something that may happen in the future based on people's obedience to the Lord, but really what these individuals did is they came and they said the hard things that people didn't want to hear. You ever known somebody who needed to hear something that just wasn't hard, but it was true, and you didn't feel like you could do it, but you knew it had to be said? See, that's the role that Deborah is fulfilling here. So she is a prophetess. She is saying the difficult things that people need to hear, and it tells that she is a judge. She is a person who's been placed in leadership because there's a leadership void in Israel once again, and no one has stepped into it. Now, specifically, I believe that they were waiting for a man to step into it, as they had seen classically happen, and Deborah finally says, okay, I guess I'll do it because this is going undone. So she steps in and she fills it. And the things I love about Deborah is she makes herself available. They name a tree after her. How many of you had a tree named after you? Probably not very many. I don't think I've had anything named after me. And so she would actually go to this tree. People knew they could find her there. They didn't have her cell phone number. So they knew, well, she was over underneath what we call the tree of Deborah. And she would stay there and she would help decide cases, but she would also help people as they were trying to discover what they should do. In fact, Judges 5:7 says that she arose as a mother to Israel. Now, in case you didn't know, next week is Mother's Day. If you haven't bought a gift, you might want to get on that. Not during this sermon, but immediately afterwards. But think about what a mother means to us. For the most part, a mother is someone who shows care to us. She helped us when we scraped our knee. She was there at important times of our life. She gave us advice and counsel. You know, when people are going through a hard time, who do they usually call out for? Their mom, not their dad. Usually my kids just call out to me when they want money. But, you know, when they want comfort, when they want care, sometimes when they want some wisdom, they go to their mom. And so that's what Deborah had become for these people. She is a woman that they trust. And these people, whether men or women, respected her, loved her, and appreciated her. And she was filling what was really an uncommon role for a woman in her time. and people were accepting because they knew that she was answering a calling, and she had a confidence she was answering a calling that had come from God. That's what's most important. Are you answering the calling God has placed on you? And so we see this come out. And so finally, we saw this last week, Israel cries out, not one or two, but the nation together is crying out to God, saying, God, we're in a bad situation. It's all our fault, but would you fix it for us? And because God is gracious and God loves us, God is going to fix it. And here's what he's going to do. He's going to go to Deborah, and he's going to use her to lead a man who God is calling to embrace his own call. Let's keep looking. Judges chapter 6, we're going to read verses 4 through 8. Verse 6, she sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinadab from Kadesh Naphtali, and said to him, has not the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you, go gather your men at Mount Tabor, taking 10,000 from the people of Naphtali and the people of Zebulun, those are two tribes of Israel, and I will draw out Sisera, the general of Jabin's army, to meet you by the river Kishon with his chariots and his troops, and I will give men to your hand. Barak said to her, if you will go with me, I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go. And so you had this man Barak, if we were actually saying in the Hebrew, it's Barak, but I can't do that for 30 minutes. So we're going to go with Barak, okay? So we have this man Barak, and he has been called by God. His calling is to deliver Israel from their oppression. God has specifically called him to that, but he is delayed. He's known what God is calling him to do. None of us can relate to this. But he's not ready to do it. He's afraid of it. He doesn't believe he could really accomplish this. God must have the wrong person. And so Barak has been struggling with this call, and now God uses Deborah's gift, her calling of being a prophetess, someone who says hard things to people when they need to hear them, and she is now going to be used to encourage him to this call. In fact, in verse 6, she says, has not the Lord commanded you? Clearly, she knew it, and he knew it. And yet, he was unwilling to do this. And so we see him say, well, okay, I'll go if you'll go with me. Now, when I read this, I really see this as a defining moment, something that shows us who Deborah was. She had filled the leadership void that existed in the nation. No one else stepped up. She had done it. She was the undisputed leader of Israel at this point. And now she is being asked to hand this over to someone who apparently is less than her. Because she's saying, you should do what God's calling you to do. She stepped up and did something that wasn't easy. And now when she's challenging him to do the very same thing, what God's calling him to do, he's not willing to do it. And I think this is a moment that she could say, you know what? I've done a lot. Let's just forget this guy. I'll go lead him myself. But she knew that God had given her a calling, and she knew that God had given him a calling. And she wanted to see Barak embrace the calling that God had on his life. That's what we should want to see out of people. Sometimes we see someone who's not willing to embrace their calling, and what do? Sometimes we do it for them. Well, if they're not going to do it, I'll just do it for them. When we do that, it doesn't build up the church. It doesn't build up the kingdom of God. It doesn't build up your children. It doesn't build up whoever you are trying to lead them to embrace the calling that God has put on them. So this is really a big moment for her. She could just say, you know what, Barak, forget it. Go home. Do whatever you were doing before, and I'll take care of this. And I have no doubt that Barak's call from God was very likely within Deborah's capacity. But it wasn't her calling. We need to recognize that just because God has called someone else, it doesn't devalue us. It doesn't mean that we're not capable. What it means is God calls us. And she looked at this situation and she said, you know what? I'm completely capable of this, but it's not God's calling for me. Proverbs 4:25 says, look straight ahead and fix your eyes on what lies before you. Don't fix your eyes on what lies in front of somebody else. Sometimes we can spend so much time and effort and sweat and even prayer trying to get someone else to get on their path when we're not even on the path we're supposed to be. We're so insistent that someone else changes, that someone else does something different, but am I first embracing the path that God has asked me to walk? It's very similar to when Jesus says, don't go and try to pull a splinter out of someone else's eye when you've got a log in your own eye. That's really Jesus saying, make sure you're walking a path of obedience before you try to lead other people to walk paths of obedience. I can't go up to my children and scream in anger and then tell them not to be angry people. Because I am not allowing them to see me first walking that path. I can't try to fix someone else. And so you see Deborah here, when faced with this choice, you see her challenge Barak to walk his path. Sometimes when I do marital counseling, or let's say marital conversations, there are times that the woman is a more mature person than the husband. Now, we know that the Bible has called men to be the spiritual leaders of their family. There's no doubt about that. But there are times that if I were to look at a couple, I'd say, you know what? Quite honestly, dude, you need to take a back seat because you're not even doing what you're supposed to be doing. But you know what I really challenge women to is really what I've seen my wife do in our household. There are many, many times that my wife is really the person that should be speaking wisdom to people. And she challenges me. I remember when we started really having times of family worship, that came because of a challenge from my wife. She could have just picked it up and ran with it, but she challenged me to do the things that God was calling me to do. Now that is a person that is very comfortable with their own calling. Because they say, you know what? I know what God is calling this person to do. I could probably do it better than them, but I'm going to lead them to do it. I'm going to teach them how to do this. And I love that Deborah's self-worth is not crippled by Barak's call. Even though he now is essentially going to be a leader over her, she's not crippled by this, and she doesn't think she's not worth anything because of this. Barak is definitely in a faith crisis. He knows God's call. He's unwilling to go. And so Deborah says to his request, when he says, will you go with me? She says, I'll go, but this could have been your moment. And now it's not going to be. Instead, there will be a woman who will receive the glory out of this moment. Now, it's not Deborah if you don't know the story, so hang with me, because if you think the Bible's not fun to read, you don't read it enough, okay? So Barak takes 10,000 men. These are basically guys out of his family tribe. He takes these men from there and another, and he goes to meet Sisera, this major tactician, this guy with a fearful military. He's going to go meet him, and once again, as they draw together, preparing for battle, once again, Deborah challenges Barak to answer the call of God for his life. Look at Judges 4, verses 13 through 14. Verse 13, it says, Sisera called out all of his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, and all the men who were with him, from Harosheth Haggiam to the river Kishon. And Deborah said to Barak, up! For this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. Does not the Lord go out before you? So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. So here you see once again. Now she went because she knew he needed that encouragement. But once again, she challenges him. Answer your call. God's calling you. She didn't say, okay, you watch me. You just stay close behind. I'll show you how it's done. She knew that wasn't God's call for her life. How incredible is it when a person recognizes God's call for their life and is so comfortable in it, they can use that platform to lead someone else to embrace their own? You know where it can be difficult for me as my children get older? It can be difficult for me sometimes to allow my children to do something that will take them a long time that would take me 3 minutes. Sometimes I say, you know what? Just don't worry about it. I'm going to do this and get it done. But I recognize I'm not building my children in those moments. I'm also recognizing I'm missing a great opportunity because they're not going to be around to do stuff for me forever, so I might as well use this while I got it. And so I look and I say, how can I teach my children to embrace what they need to learn? And that's what you see out of Deborah. She's now leading them to embrace God's call, and you see this happen. And I think there's a question that just bears out because we're seeing a lot of things go on in our nation right now, and as I was reading through this text, it just comes out at me. Are the actions of Deborah here, where she's leading the whole thing, and now she's handing the reins over to a man who seems to be certainly less qualified than her, is Deborah doing a disservice to women in this moment? I think it's a question that comes out. The fact that this question comes up to me shows me sometimes the issues that we struggle with. You know, some could say Deborah could have struck a blow for women's advancement. She could have allowed women to be seen as powerful, strong individuals, and this is really an argument that is a symptom of our times. Because listen, Deborah was satisfied with the call that God had placed on her. She didn't need to live someone else's call in order to be happy. But we live in a society right now where men are challenged to soften up. Women are challenged to toughen up. And the confused are simply giving up. When I hear that term transgendered float around in our society, if you say it enough times, it almost sounds like a biological condition. But in fact, it's a term of confusion. Literally, that's what it is. Someone who's so confused, they don't know if they're a man or a woman. And when I hear that, I think, what is causing someone to be confused about something that has been so clear for centuries? We live in a society that is not quickly accepting of a creator. And when everything about you is an accident, it's a good chance your gender is too then. You have to recognize that God created you completely as you are, with a calling that is to bless you, not to curse you, a calling that is to bless the lives of those around you, not to curse you inwardly, or to hold you down, or to hold you back. In Galatians 3:28, it says, there is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, no male or female, for you are all one in Christ. When you read that, this is not a statement of gender confusion, that there's no male or female and we're all just whatever. This is a statement that is referring to the equality of personhood, whether you were a man or a woman. You have value, you have calling, and God knows you and loves you. I saw Ravi Zacharias answer a question. If you don't know who Ravi Zacharias is, he's basically a major apologist for the Christian faith. He answers the tough questions. And I saw a video of a young man ask him, does God love men more? Because my mother's reading the Bible, and as she reads it, she feels like she sees a God who loves men more. And he shared with her in saying that Christianity and the coming of Jesus Christ is the greatest thing to ever happen to women. And if you want to see somebody who was embraced as someone who cared about men and women, you see Jesus. Who were the first people to go out to the tomb? The women. Who were the first people that Jesus tasked, go and tell people that I'm alive? Women. Who were the people that so often were there supporting Jesus financially, walking with him? It wasn't always the 12. There were many faithful women. When you walk through nations in our world where Christianity is not only not a dominant worldview, but an illegal one, what do you see? You see the oppression of women. You see women not being allowed to learn how to read. You see women treated as property. You do not see that through the gospel of Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ, God's Son, He made you with a purpose. He has not made a mistake yet and never will. And for the person that we think we are doing a service to, of saying, well, you're confused, so you just sort that out. We need to tell them the truth, that when they come to an observance and an understanding that God has created them as a total person, mind, gender, everything, that is your calling. And just like God tells us in Jeremiah 29:11, He has plans to prosper us and not to harm us, to give us a hope and a future as we live close to Him. So changing someone's gender is not going to be the magic bullet that now allows them to feel like they really want to be. But we see people that live in such confusion because they're always looking for something other than God's call for them. It's happened in my own life. How many times have I started to look at the calling God has given to somebody else? How many times have you done that? Why hasn't God given me this? Why hasn't God done that? What if I started celebrating people who embrace God's call for their life and I embrace God's call for my life? What would my life look like if instead of living in jealousy, I lived in excitement and gratitude for what God is doing in the lives of others? You see this coming out of the life of Deborah. She knew that God placing this call in Barak had nothing to do with her capacity or her self-worth. It had everything to do with what was God's calling in that moment. We need to really pray and say, God, what are you calling me to? Not because someone else has got something and I wonder if I could maybe have that. God, what are you calling me to? Who are you calling me to? And so now this godly woman, once again asked by this fearful man, oh, are you going to go with me? And now she says, go. Just go. And he does it. Finally, he goes. Look at Judges 4:15-16. And it says, and the Lord routed Sisera and all of his chariots and all of his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and fled away on foot. And Barak pursued the chariots and the army to Harosheth Haggim. That's the place they had come from. So basically, he chased them back where they came from. And all the army of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword. Not a man was left. Now, Barak's fear, what had it kept him from? He thought, well, my fear is keeping me alive. My fear is keeping me from dying. But in fact, his fear had been keeping him from a victory that God was ready to work. Because it says there that God routed Sisera. It doesn't say that Barak and his army did it. It says that God did it. In fact, if you read on into Judges 5, it gives us a little bit more. It tells us as Barak and his army are going down the side of the mountain, it starts raining. It starts raining hard. And this river that they're meeting next to, it overflows its banks. And suddenly these chariots of iron that were such an advantage are now stuck in the mud. And so these men are all abandoning these chariots that they were planning on using to win the war, and now they're all decimated, they're all destroyed. In fact, it tells us that Sisera's entire army, because of what God did, was completely annihilated. Now, here's the rest of the story. It doesn't exactly fit into our context, but I want you to understand it because it's just so cool and you should read the Bible more. So Sisera escapes, and he goes to this tent of somebody who is pledged to be kind of in league with their king. And he goes in there and he's asking this woman, Jael, will you protect me? I'm trying to hide from these guys. She goes, sure, come on in. And he goes, can you give me some water to drink? So she gives him warm milk instead. He starts to get sleepy and she says, don't worry, just lay down. Everything's going to be fine. No one will find you here. He falls asleep and she nails his head to the ground, literally, with a tent peg. Remember it said that Barak wasn't going to get the victory that day, but it wasn't Deborah either. It was this woman, Jael. She's the one that says, you know what? We got to end this today. God's put him in my hand. This is over. But the bigger picture is this. What you see out of this whole situation, what we see out of this whole account, is we see people that were willing to accept the call that God placed on their life, Not the call that God placed on someone else's life. You need to find your calling. And then you need to embrace it. I have friends that I grew up with in college, friends that I even went to seminary with, that were confident, prayerfully confident, that God had given them a calling to be in the ministry. They knew what God's calling was, and today they are not. They weren't willing to embrace it. They weren't willing to say, this is God's best for me, because it got tough. Listen, everything's tough in life. You know, it's always that situation where you think, well, I want to be a major league ball player. You know, they got an easy life. You know, you make all these millions of dollars and get to play baseball all the time. But then you hear them talk about it, being away from their families and playing through injuries and the things that they're called sometimes. You realize, okay, so maybe that is a little bit tougher existence. Listen, everybody's got it tough. Just because you have a difficult circumstance in your life doesn't mean that you are not right smack dab in the middle of where God put you. Jesus was walking within the will of God, and it took him to the cross. Sometimes that calling may not be easy, but if you and I will embrace it, find it and embrace it, it is the best choice you can make in your life. What would be accomplished in our church if you embraced your calling? What could be accomplished in your family if you embraced your calling? And perhaps is God challenging you to speak a difficult truth to somebody you know who needs to embrace their calling? What if we took God up on these invitations? What if I really had a confidence about what God called me to do, and then I went out and did it? I'm telling you, as someone who feels very confident that right now I am living in the calling of God, a calling that I've embraced, I'm telling you, there's no better place for you to be. When you know that you're doing what God has called you to, then when Mondays happen, anyone know what a Monday is? When Mondays happen, it's okay. You know Friday's coming. I challenge you. What is God's calling? Embrace it. And listen, if you don't understand that the most important calling that God has on your life is that you would be saved, that you would say no to sin and yes to the salvation and the forgiveness of Jesus, then listen, all the rest of it doesn't matter. God is not prepared to give you the rest of it unless you've entered into a relationship with His Son. But once you admit, I'm a sinner, I'm going nowhere without Jesus, I want Him in my life, He's got all of this ready for you. All of it's ready for you. But you must take that first step. And when you do, it completely changes everything. No longer do you have to live with the guilt and live with the shame. Now you can live knowing that God has called you to something that you can embrace. So I challenge you. Some of us walked in here and we've been resisting a calling, whether it's here in service to this church, maybe it's in service to your family, or maybe it's even challenging someone to take up theirs. Maybe you already walked in and God's put it right smack dab in front of you. Listen, how much of a benefit have you received by putting it off? But you know what? Maybe this morning you're still struggling to say, I don't know exactly what that is. Well, let's take a moment right now.